welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and in this episode, I'm talking to Jesse. He also goes by Psycho on Wall Street. Jesse is a trader. He's got his background in pot stocks, of all things, and he had a really interesting boomer bust story, and we talk about that for a little bit, but then we pick up into his journey today. So he was a part-time trader, turned full-time trader, back to part-time trader, and now he's a full-time crypto trader, and he has a really interesting story. He's a quality trader. I've known him for a while. I think you will enjoy this episode, especially if you're looking to find your place in the trading realm. This episode is brought to you by The Ocean. The Ocean's a new partner for LedgerCast. I'm really excited to have them on. You probably recognize the name if you are a regular listener or watcher of this show, because I interviewed their CEO, John, a few weeks ago, and we hit it off so much so that I invited them to see if they would like to be a partner. The Ocean is a decentralized exchange, or a DEX. They're a 0x relayer. I really like how they're launching with a liquidity first promise, and they have an airdrop coming up that is completely free. It's the only token mechanism. Their VCs and their team have no tokens, nothing like that. There was no ICO. This is purely a token that's utilized for the sake of trading discounts on the platform to encourage people to utilize it. Your tokens are always going to be your tokens. When you're trading, like when you're connecting your wallet, there's no custody on their behalf. It's fully KYC'd, and I think that it's going to be a really great platform. Check it out. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean, and I look forward to discussing more about what they have going on as they launch. Their airdrop's July 31st, so register as soon as you can so that you can lock in those tokens and get discounts for using the platform. With that, here's our show. Hello and welcome to a new episode of LedgerCast. Today we have a fascinating guest to me. This is somebody that has traditional market experience, but even their traditional market experience is far from traditional. We've got Jesse, or you may know him on Twitter if you've been following him as Psycho on Wall Street. Hey, Jesse.
How's it going, Brian?
Going well, man. So we've had an opportunity to get to know each other over the past, I don't know how many months, 6 months or so. We see each other in Telegram. We've chatted some, and I got to know some of your crypto story through that. But the way I really got more of your background was listening to an episode of Chat with Traders. So Chat with Traders is a great podcast for anybody that doesn't know. They mostly interview traditional market folks with interesting stories. You were on episode 57 of that I'll link up in the show notes. That was early 2016. Yeah. And we're gonna do a TLDL, too long didn't listen, for people that don't want to catch up on that. But what we're really gonna base this interview on is your story since then. So like doing less in the traditional stock markets and coming into the crypto markets, find out what you've been up to. The title on that episode though is certainly one to draw you in, and it was $500,000 of beginner's luck. Or at least that's what you called it, but you had a little bit of a boom and bust story. So can you give us the relatively short version of what you experienced in the traditional markets?
Yeah, no problem at all. And again, I appreciate you having me on here. It's been good getting to know you too over the last couple months. It went by fast. Crypto goes by fast. I had just randomly to make that long story short. My neighbor told me opened up an E-Trade account, so I did too. And it was just kind of the right timing. I happened to get on Twitter at the same time too and learned about a bunch of... I have no financial experience whatsoever, no formal training, background, anything. I was just goofing around and buying some stuff here and there. And then the weed stock thing happened. And I back in 2015 or... Yeah, it was 2014, I believe. Just put my savings account in it. No big deal. Just, I had made a little bit of money trading some biotechs. Again, I had no idea what I was doing, but spidey sense, whatever. I smelt something was cooking over there in the weed industry, and it seemed like something new to get involved in. So got involved in some of those and, it took off like crazy and just kept recycling profits. And you know, in a matter of, you know, 60, 90, 90 days, 3-4 months, it was up and then down. And then I was back to square one of actually learning how to trade after that. Because, you know, I honestly didn't even know how to read a chart. I didn't even know what level two was during that time. So in all reality, I had no business making those kind of gains at that time, just because, you know, I wasn't ready for them.
Yeah. And it's really awesome that you, I think, probably humble yourself more than you should be humbling yourself. But even in, no matter the market, we saw even in 2017, huge raging bull market in crypto, there were plenty of people that lost money. So you you made money. You were pretty honest in that episode about kind of how the trajectory of your P&L, but you got that $500,000 from not a lot of initial capital. Like, that was a multi-X, at least a 10X, right?
Yeah.
From your starting point. If I remember right, even you maybe went like 30,000 down to 8,000, then to 500,000 or something like that.
Yeah, that's about how it worked.
So at one point, you just had an incredible run. Was there a fundamental catalyst going on with weed stocks that caused them to run like that?
I think, quite frankly, it was, you know, at the time, it was just a good timing for a lot of things to get integrated. You had the social aspect of you know, FinTwit, of finance Twitter, and Twitter trading that was starting to catch on, and people following and developing their niches and tribes and everything. And it was just one of those things where it's very similar to crypto. You know, we've talked about some of those similarities, but it's just one of those things where once the word gets out on enough mediums and enough outlets, it's just, you know, everybody wants to play because for a very short time, you know, it's kind of free money. I hate saying that, but I mean, it really was. You could go in there and throw a couple grand at any POS, OTC, you know, weed stock. And, you know, you could make a 5 to 10 to 20X gain on it in a matter of weeks or even days sometimes. And so when you have all that activity, and then, you know, the Forbes and all of the major financial media outlets started talking about the weed boom, it was just very similar to where it just, you know, J-hooked, got that extreme momentum and peaked. And then that was that. And it crashed hard, really hard. And, you know, same bubble type, you know, chart features that everybody refers to, the cheat sheet, they see everywhere else, you know.
Was a lot of the Colorado legislation going on in that time frame, 2015, 2016? I can't really remember exactly.
Yeah, Colorado was right around that time, give or take a year. But there was 4 or 5 states I know that were actively on the ballot and lobbying, using major media to lobby. And so
and going
it was kind of in the face of
everybody. And everything. So yeah, it was just – so it was a hot market segment with – I guess a lot of companies with low liquidity and a lot of room to push and whatnot.
Right.
So that people should just listen to that episode. We don't want to rehash the entire thing, but it's a fascinating story in its own right. And then you found yourself at some point. So at the end of this, you were full-time trading for part of that just to be able to stay on top of it, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I was one of those idiots that, you know, they made some lucky money and they quit their job, you know? So I did, I mean, at the time I quit, I had a couple hundred grand in the bank account because it was right going up. So I had, you know, no idea that it was going to crash like it did. But yeah, so after that happened, I tried to trade for a little over a year, had some success. It wasn't really much. And we were looking to buy a house too. So I'd, you know, and when you go to the bank, you have to have all these documents nowadays, and they didn't take my weed money. They didn't use that as a reliable income source. So just went back to work for a couple of years, and then I went full time again.
I gotcha. So, and I guess part of it too, you make a bankroll and you've got that available to yourself, if you're not in a market segment that's going parabolic like that, then there can be some additional challenges, I presume, in terms of trying to take some off the table as a full-time trader combined with trying to increase your portfolio because you're essentially, it's like taking a hit on a trade every single time you take your salary out, right?
Yep. Every single time. And again, I was so green. I had no idea what I was doing. No structure, no framework, anything. So it's good that it happened then rather than, you know, 10 years down the road with more money.
Yeah. And then you went back to being a part-time trader. And this is when you went to teach yourself, right? So what was your process for learning how to trade? Because I'm imagining that that helped prepare you for getting into crypto in 2017.
Oh yeah, definitely. That was, you know, one of the easiest things that was for me transitioning over into crypto. You know, when I was getting out of the weed stocks, I didn't know anybody, and I just had to ask for help. And I just started asking for help from everybody, you know, that would help me. You start piecing together things as you go along, and it got to a point. I mean, before I got into crypto, I'd been trading. The market was fine. We had some good successes. I had some bad trades just like anybody else, but I just got really stale with legacy markets. And people are probably going to listen to this and be like, haha, idiot, you got out right before they went up. And I'm okay with that because it wasn't stale on a financial level. It was stale. I wasn't getting the same enjoyment out of it, and I wasn't getting the same stimulation out of it. And so, I had, looked at crypto several times over the last couple of years. And then, you know, my wife and I had some health challenges. And so everything kind of came together to where it was just the right time to transition into something that could capture me again, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you say right before it started to go up, for people that aren't familiar with the traditional market, there's typically a lot of uncertainty around election seasons. That's my way of making the entire flatness of the S&P in 2016 a lot smaller of a deal than it was, and I'm sure it felt emotionally. But, you know, that was a cooling off period for the stock market. And just looking at a chart, there was what you can look at now is a pretty clear breakout retest and then boom, which essentially went from the latter couple months of 2016 until the first or end of January of 2018 this year. And now we're in another consolidation phase. So when you say you got out right before it ran, it was basically because there was a full year of just madness in the S&P broadly. And I'm sure a lot of sector rotation and whatnot mixed in with that. But even still, the year that the S&P had, it was nothing to the year that crypto had in the same time frame. So, you know, people can give you a hard time about that, but you obviously found the market segment with the higher profitability. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say higher profitability, and I mean, it was just a lot more interesting, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can only imagine. I mean, I find pretty much all markets interesting. And I think in some ways, traditional markets, the things that impact them, I find more interesting sometimes than crypto. But I want to know, when you were getting to know yourself as a trader, did you find out in that in-between time, like after your boom and bust through weed stocks and into your crypto trading life, did you find out what kind of trader you were, and what is that? Like, how do you identify in terms of your strengths as a trader?
That's a great question. And to be honest, the glaringly candid answer is I still am working on finding out what my absolute niche is. You know, I mean, I've been trading now for 5 years, and I've tried some systems long enough to know that they're not for me, not that they don't work. Just, I mean, you know how it is. I think in that year, the biggest part about my getting to know myself as a trader is finding out which situations put me into a position to make irrational decisions. And whether that's, you know, market conditions, whether it's sizing, or whether, you know, it's a time trade, either one, I just had to kind of get to know myself, so I knew what situations I needed to be in to make the best decisions. So I wasn't just winging it, or depending on, I mean, you know, I used a lot of the indicators previously. I learned most of my moving average TA, and swing trading from my time in the legacy markets. Mm-hmm. But to be honest with you, I most of what I've learned has been in the last year in crypto, as far as actually becoming a better trader and using indicators correctly. Again, some people are going to be listening to this like, dude, this guy's so green. But I'm just a firm believer that it's, you know, everybody takes a different amount of time. And it's taken me about 5 years to get to a point where I can look at a computer screen and 100% on different time frames, have an idea of what the rhythm is of that chart. And before, I was just guessing using different time frames, different indicators, everything. So I think that...
When you were trading traditional markets, I mean, if you're trading those huge moves where they're just going nuts over a short period of time, it seems like you were primarily doing breakout momentum style trades, trying to ride, you know, a low time frame, moving average, and then cutting out before it's too late, right? Before you're holding the bag. Is that essentially how you were playing those?
Yeah.
So when you got into crypto, did you start with that? Like, you know, find some breakout and go for it? Or did you feel like you had to adjust your style pretty quickly?
I had to, honestly, it was a good time for me to kind of not really start over, but start with a clean slate, which was also one of the attractive features of a new asset class for me coming into crypto. Now, before, I used to be a hardcore swing trader die, you know, hold things long, long time. Now I'm just a trader. You know, for me, each trade has a different time frame, just like everybody else. And I personally like to go home with the majority of my gains at the end of the day now. But that doesn't
the majority of your gains being in the dollar.
No. In Bitcoin, just in Bitcoin.
But on spot.
On spot. So, and even, you know, I just like to close out trades before I go to bed, essentially.
Yeah.
And if I do leave something on, you know, it's a relatively small position with a wide stop, you know, based on something I'd seen previously. But now it's, there's no more like set time frame or certain chart time frame that I look at. I have, you know, anywhere from the 5 minute to the 1 month up at any given time, depending on what the trade plan is for that week. So 1 week, if it's trending, I may be a swing trader. If it's choppy, I may be a day trader. You know, it just kind of depends. But I didn't have very good success trying to pigeonhole myself into a categorical trader. So I just stopped trying to do it.
When you say your trade plan for the week, are you making active trade plans before you get going on a new week?
Yeah. So the nice thing about crypto too is because it's happening, you know, all the time, and it's fast, and the TA, it's a good recipe for me to keep my attention. It depends when the, okay, you know, when we're trending completely down, you know, I may look at, make a new plan a couple times a week, but more often than not, I like to use that Friday close to figure out where things are headed, you know, depending on what the weekend cluster is. But that Friday close is usually what determines my plan for the next week now.
Interesting. So that's not actually on the exact time frame of the weekly candle close, but for you, it's kind of the end of the session in terms of where volume exists. You, for in the times that I've watched you, you are like a prolific order book guy. Like you've got eyes on all the major exchange order books to see what funny stuff is happening. What value have you discovered by not only watching volume, but watching the books on major exchanges to see how other players in the market are trading?
It's a great question. It's funny because only one person that I've ever asked for coaching, trading advice, mentorship, only one of them has been a tape reader. And he's the only guy that I haven't asked to learn about reading tape, which is funny. And so it's mostly been just trial and error. You know, when I first got into crypto, the first, I kid you not, like the first probably 9 weeks were almost 20 hours a day at the computer just watching. I just needed time to feel the rhythm of how this thing moves, you know? And mm-hmm. And through that, you know, while you're sitting at the computer, you can't look at your chart very often or 24/7. So you got to glance down and, you know, check your email, look at the tape, look at the order books, et cetera. And that's really just by doing that repeatedly for, and now it's been, you know, almost a year. Now I do think it does give me an edge, nothing to make extreme decisions on, but it definitely does give me a useful indicator as to what might occur next. And there are little variances, you know, that you pick up on.
Yeah, what you're saying reminds me a great deal of another Chat with Traders episode that I actually just listened to. That was just their most recent one, where he interviewed this guy nicknamed Brambo, and he's a floor trader. He would trade the spread in the pit, so he was constantly, you know, filling on both sides of the book, and then he moved into, you know, a modern age without the pit, but he stayed extremely relevant in the space. And when he was talking about his strengths, he was just like, you just know the chart. Like, you look at the chart so long, like beyond all human comprehensible times that make sense to a normal person, you stare at the chart that long and longer and until you just know it. And then when you see the move, you know it's something different. You know it's something actionable.
Yep.
And I have to admit that while I can connect with that to some degree, it's a wild way to think of a market for me personally. And perhaps it's because I find myself and my own strengths more in the swing trade realm. Like, you know, I might find a setup on short time frames, but it's not where I live, you know? But this is obviously, if people are listening to you say that about reading the tape is the, I guess, the vernacular, and listening to you say that, it might sound strange to a lot of people, but the, you know, the candles are telling a story on every time frame, and the story has the most detail on those low time frames. So it sounds like that's where you're living. So do you set a bias in that weekly conversation with yourself? Are you looking at the larger time frames then and saying, you know, generally I feel like this week should have a bullish bias or a bearish bias, and therefore I'm going to have that on my mind while I'm watching the tape?
It's really easy to get that biased, but you know, it's just been a constant battle to not be biased, especially in these types of markets where there's so much, not biased, but so many opinions set in stone on extreme. Yeah, like
we're going to 3K or, yeah, you know,
or we're going to 300K.
Absolutely the bottom.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, and especially when a lot of these people are, you know, our peers or people that you've been trading with or, you know, look to for, you know, to take another look at your chart or something. It's just hard to really keep very, you know, very complacent during those extreme times because I, like I said, my biggest thing as a trader was my emotions and still is, and it will always be. I've just kind of accepted it because, you know, I'm a driven person. I get pissed, you know, and I get jacked.
So you find yourself on tilt if you're on the wrong side.
No, I usually get pissed when, like, you miss your stop by like a penny or a dime or something like that, or you've got something set up. You know, it's just for me. The other thing too is, you know, no matter what the trade result was, it could have always been a better trade, even if it couldn't have been traded any better. It just always could have been a better trade for me. So it's kind of like when I was going back to the legacy markets became stale and crypto was exciting for me was because, you know, you can, you know, hit a trade and make big gains and then you can hit a trade and lose. But the opportunity to do both is far, to me, it's far greater in crypto than it is in the legacy markets. You know, does that make sense? In legacy markets, I could probably have one to two big trades a year. Whereas in crypto, there's so many opportunities and there's so many participants that you can have one or two big trades a week you know, if you're lucky or if you're just that good. So,
yeah, I definitely do see that. Are you trading altcoins in Bitcoin or is it mostly Bitcoin?
I haven't traded alts since January, and all of January was selling. It might even gone into
February
too.
You're a smart guy.
Well, the alts were, you know, they just reminded me almost exactly like the pink sheets from the weed market, you know, just people slapping weed in their name or slapping blockchain in their name. And all of a sudden something goes up 5,000,000%. But, the alts actually, I swing traded those, you know, I bought a bunch back in, I think, August, September, and just held on to them until things went crazy. And,
So based on that time frame, you probably bag held a few of those for a little while or had to average down on them or something. But you were essentially expecting at some point that money from Bitcoin would roll into altcoins you'd see your day on those. You went right where I want to go, which is how did you take those lessons from the traditional markets and identify and improve in the crypto markets? So for instance, making the big run in weed stocks, but then losing so much of that back. How did you protect yourself, or did you? Did you make some of the same mistakes? But if not, how did you protect yourself when it came time for the crypto markets to break down between December and February?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you asked it. I was going to bring it up anyway, just because I feel like a lot of the times people don't really give full transparency on some of the things that happen in their career. I don't know why, but I made some better decisions. It was a nice run, you know. The gains were good. Obviously, everybody knows that. And this time, I took more out of my trading account as those gains were happening, rather than leaving them in and trying to, you know, 20x my account every month. And so I took some of those out. Or actually, I took about 2/3 out. It was roughly 65%. And the only thing I didn't do, which I should have, was sell more Bitcoin for fiat instead of leaving a lot of it in Bitcoin. So it's just, you know, one of those things. It's another situation where you learn something, and this will happen again. And the next time it happens, I have a really good feeling that I will work through that, whatever bubble market cycle it is, I'll work through it a lot more confidently, knowing really that I've made most of the mistakes you can make in that situation.
Yeah. So let's use an example. So when you say 65%, you mean you took a trade on some coin, whether it was Ethereum or Zcash or whatever, something that had a big run, and You got your profit on the alt trade, but then you left more now than you wish you had on Bitcoin once you exited the altcoin trade. Is that basically what you're saying? Okay, so you preserved your Bitcoin relative value very well, it sounds like. But you still took a drawdown on Bitcoin itself, taking a hit.
Exactly.
I'd like to take a quick break to thank our partner for this episode, The Ocean. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean to sign up now. This is pretty time sensitive, at least for their initial launch, because they are launching July 31st, and you need to sign up in order to get 1,000 tokens on their airdrop, which is completely free. This isn't an ICO. Their VCs don't have tokens. They don't have tokens. It's purely to incentivize trading discounts and for people to use the platform and take advantage of that. This is a fully KYC'd platform that allows them to bring on great liquidity partners. You're going to be able to trade some of the ERC-20 tokens that you know. They're starting with just a few because they are bringing on that liquidity for each and every pair. You just don't get that in other DEXs, and you get that with The Ocean. That's why I'm personally super excited about it. They are super compliance focused, and they're here for the long term. They're looking to enable eventually the tokenization and the tokenized trading of all sorts of things, whether that's utility tokens or eventually securities tokens and all sorts of stuff. This is wallet-to-wallet trading. You don't deposit your tokens there. You can connect via your own wallet and trade with others. They've got all sorts of cool stuff with limit orders and maker market orders that's pretty innovative in this space, and I think you'll just really like it. If you want to get to know them further, you can go to their website at letterstatus.com/theocean is a nice shortcut to get there. And then, of course, you can listen to my interview with John from a few weeks ago. I enjoyed it myself, and it'll help you understand more about their platform. Thanks so much for the Ocean for coming on as a new Ledger Status partner. You'll be hearing more about them over the coming months. And now let's get back to the main event. Okay. And then since January and February, it sounds like you've maintained at least some portion or maybe a large portion of spot or, you know, just holding Bitcoin. But you're actively trading Bitcoin as well, right, on margin accounts or spot too, like with shorter term trades?
Yeah, so I use a couple of different exchanges. Everybody knows the major one. And that's primarily now is all of the derivatives, all of the futures, every contract, asset, instrument outside of spot. That's what I'm looking at right now, just because I had my time buying spot, and I probably won't buy it again until, you know, it gets back down to that level.
Yeah. Until it's so cheap that you can't tell yourself not to. Right.
Right.
So when you're trading on margin or with a derivatives account, do you apply different rules, or do you apply essentially the same rule set as when you're trading on spot?
Both on spot and in margin accounts, my stops are, I mean, they're probably tighter than anybody you will ever meet. And it's simply because I just don't trust myself manually with the button if things get a little fuzzy in regards to a trade plan. So just having my stops tight and my exits, obviously, you know, my limit order is already in, it just keeps me out of trouble. You know, it just protects me from myself.
And that's something that you've learned because of seeing your own emotions in the past.
100%.
If someone's listening and they're like, man, this clicks with me, like, but I don't have that discipline, right? And honestly, I'll put myself in that frame of mind. I appreciate your honesty throughout the show, by the way. So I'm a very disciplined trader on my traditional equities accounts. So I trade different things. I trade traditional equities, and I have retirement that I just let roll for the most part, and make extremely macro decisions of like, this is in the market, or this is in the bonds, or it's not in anything. But that's those trade, like I might look at that once a year, right? And then I have equities I might trade, look at like once a month when the market's boring. Right now it's not boring at all, like in the S&P. So I'm trading that a little more actively. But no matter what the scenario is on those types of accounts, I'm extremely disciplined. Like I'm going to cut my losses. I'm going to distribute my account. I'm not going to go all in on one thing because I just believe in it. A lot of my stuff's going to hit long-term gains because I hold it for over a year. When I get into crypto, my brain changes, right? It's I am, my risk tolerance is so high in crypto. I'm not always 100% certain of why I do that. So I want to know, how do you apply your mentality to crypto, where sometimes it feels like, at least to me, it feels like funny money, right? Because it's just a whole different world. So how are you psychologically approaching the market with that degree of discipline? Because I'm jealous of that, to be honest.
In those first 3 months where I was essentially just, you know, burning capital to learn how to trade crypto properly. You have to be in something and experience a 60% move both ways in under 4 hours to understand, you know, like what it actually feels to be in those situations where, it, you know, it's just, there were so many instances where I'd rather be out of a trade than in it. And I wanted to change that up, and I wanted it to be more where most of the time I was wishing I was in a trade. And now it's, you know, if I'm the bigger the size I use, the tighter the stop. And that's really what it boils down to. And when I say a tight stop, I mean, if I'm going in on a, if I'm buying BTC at, let's just say 6K flat, and I'm long, I'm going to put my stop at 59.80. You know, that's just how it is, you know, because the thing is, if it's going to go lower, it's going to go lower. And now I'm not in that trade and I'm not worrying about trading out of it or cutting losses. It's just, I'm stopped out. I anticipated it. It happened. Okay, we're good. Move on. Next trade.
So do you find yourself giving your own, your account a lot of paper cuts, looking for the bigger moves?
Well, see, that's the thing is I don't look for the bigger moves now because I, quite frankly, I believe the biggest moves already happened, at least for, you know, the next foreseeable future. Now, you know, I just trade 50 and 100 point swings. That's really it. I'm just looking at, when I wake up and I look at the chart, I'm now it's different. I don't really care what the price of Bitcoin is. I care what the price range of Bitcoin is. And that's where I'm starting to set my schedule within that box. And so that's, you know, when I'm doing 50 point trades, or 35 to 50 point trades, I just don't bother with looking for a big move anymore, because if that trade hits and it's a good trade, you know, I've stopped out 65%. I got 35% on. If it wants to go another 200-300%, have at it, you know?
That's really interesting. One of the, it sounds like you approached, once you did your boom and your bust, you were still trading. And that was probably the most interesting part of your Chat with Traders interview to me, because you were talking about how you would create, you created a system where after you're in a trade, you might take some off after like a 3% move, and then you might take some more after like a 5% move. And then you're probably all out before it even makes like a 10% swing. And granted, in traditional equities, a 10% swing can be a pretty big swing, but you were applying tight stops on that strategy as well.
Right.
Were you able to do that because the majority of time you're just not in the position, and therefore you're just really comfortable with minimizing your risk on that trade?
I think it's yes. I'm very comfortable with minimizing risk now. Like, you know, this is going to sound funny, but I'm just too old. You know, I got ulcers and stuff. I'm sure, you know, a lot of traders who've been, I've only been doing this for 5 years. You know, I got a late start. I just a lot more comfortable making consistently smaller sized trades for a very consistent gain than, you know, sweating bullets and maxing out my emotional capital, sizing in on something because I see a huge op. I just don't have that much to give anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. How do you avoid the fear of missing the big one, like the big turnaround or the big move? I know it sounds like from a macro scale, you don't feel like that's there right now. But let's say something did come through, right? Like some big decision came through and it made a huge deal. An ETF gets approved or something. If you're not in, how do you avoid that FOMO, like being comfortable with missing those types of catalyst events?
The JOMO, the joy of missing out. Yeah, I love the JOMO.
The JOMO's good. The FOMO's bad.
Yeah, exactly. JOMO's great. Well, you know, I got a lot of scars on my hands from trying to be that market hero, you know, diving out to catch the knife because he thinks he's, you know, he's better than the market. And, you know, it took a couple years of beating my big ego up to be able to realize that you're not the market hero, you know? And so I don't really worry about a big move because the two gigantic moves in my life that I've caught have just been right place, right time, you know? And in between those two moves, which were about 5 years apart, you know, I spent probably three of those years looking for the next opportunity. And because of that, your opportunity cost, because you're so narrowly focused on finding something huge, I think greatly diminishes in a non-exciting way. And the fact that, you know, you know you can add up a lot of base hits and doubles and triples. And if you're, you know, swinging hard every time, you're going to strike out, and you strike out hard sometimes too. And so, yeah, I just got sick of trying to catch a knife and sick of making sure I had every piece of news and every channel covered. And I just said, you know what, before I make my dreams come true and anybody else's dreams come true, I'd really just like to make a living first. So that's the goal in my time frame, my window of growth right now, is just to become extremely painfully, excruciatingly consistent at what I do right now. And once that's in place, then I'll probably start branching out or something.
Yeah, no, I love that. So how long have you been trading full-time on the crypto side of things? Because you went full-time traditional equities, went part-time, got into crypto. And at what point did you go full-time?
I went full-time in, it would be early August of 2017.
Okay.
Maybe halfway through August.
Okay, so you're coming up on a year of that.
Yeah.
How much more challenging has it been to make ends meet in the sense of, you know, paying yourself from trading and not just pulling money out of the account because you need to put food on the table? How much more challenging has that been in the downturn versus when it was in the upturn?
Well, I mean, it's that whole steak 1 week, ramen the next. I think it's so easy to get caught up in the bubble type hypes. I hate the word bubble. When you've got emerging assets or asset classes or products or anything that gets that kind of parabolic hype, it's really easy to, and I say that because it's my fault. I'm a victim of my own demise, and that it's easy to get caught up thinking that it's always going to be that way. And so one of those important lessons, I guess, learned over those the last several years is that as long as I stay consistent, the market can do whatever it wants. I'll keep myself protected, if that makes sense. And so, you know, we just don't live a lifestyle that is crazy baller status. And, you know, again, we've had some challenges over the last year, just on a personal level with health and stuff. But we're homebodies, like to just hang out. So we don't spend that much money. So I guess it's been easier compared to, you know, someone who did buy a Lambo and leased it, or something like that.
But so as a full-time trader, your discipline is really no different than someone that's not a full-time trader, right? Like you live below your means in there, and you cover your expenses.
Yeah.
But I guess it's possible for you to go a month if, like, you're on the wrong side of the trades, you're on a cold streak, whatever. You go a month where, you know, you don't make profits. Your account shrinks during that time. And I guess in those times when you're doing that, you still pay yourself for if you have to pay the bills, but you're reducing your account balance in that scenario. Do you have advice for somebody if let's say they're in a similar situation or they have dreams of going full time? What kind of advice do you have for somebody that is looking at a full time crypto future, but they're not there yet?
I think it all depends on, it's all going to be individual, you know, based on where they're at in their life, their job, career, family, et cetera. I'm a firm believer that you just have to have all of the other stuff squared away or your trading's going to suck. I don't think that it's feasible for anybody to try and be squared away 24 hours a day, but to be able to recognize when it's not time to trade for you, not because the market is saying, hey, it's a bad trade, but if you show up to the computer and you got other stuff on your mind, or, you know, you got in a fight with your boss, or, you know, you and your old lady are beefing, or your kid's sick or something, yeah. Or dog sick. Yeah, right. Or your dog sick. That's funny. Your trading is probably going to suffer because you're not focused. And in those situations, you know, if you can't take yourself out of your game, if you can't effectively manage yourself, you're not going to, it's not going to be fun. So I just, quite frankly, I would tell everyone to delay going full time for as long as possible until it gets to a point where you're losing money by not going full time. And it's, you know, taken away from other things. I would say stay part-time, stay in your job. It's so the peace of mind people get from having a check come in who aren't used to, you know, managing a financial account themselves or trading by themselves or for themselves. That I honestly think that will help their learning curve and the growth process, because if you're constantly worried, oh, I had a bad trade, took a drawdown, my accounts, now I got to pay these bills, you're just not going to be able to climb out of that. You know, it's just tough.
Yeah, I would add to that too. If you don't have enough in the bank to live off of without taking anything out of your account for a while, then that's going to be pretty dangerous of a situation to get into. Not even practically speaking, but just mentally, because you're going to say from month one, I got to make it rain down or else I'm screwed. Right. So like, it's good. I would say I'm not a full-time trader. I think everybody knows that. I hope they know that. But I feel like you have to be in a place to where you have a comfort level with your account to where, like you said, by not giving daily attention to your trading and what you're doing, then you're just losing significant amounts of opportunity. And you just feel silly by spending that time at work. I personally find a tremendous amount of freedom, and I work for myself, so I do have a lot of flexibility to look at crypto and spend time on crypto. But I find a tremendous amount of freedom by spending my time, my job being other things, even if they're related to the thing I'm trading in, but a tremendous amount of freedom from doing something else that's not relying on me being a profitable trader.
Right.
And if you, to deal with that level of stress, you got to be able to handle the regular stress of just being a trader where you're trading your savings account, not where you're trading your, you know, your daily or monthly income.
Right. No, I totally agree.
Yeah. And what you said was funny. So crypto is a 24-hour market. You know, but we came into this call today. I've got sick kids. You've got sick pups. And, you know, sometimes life happens when you're trading and when you're working and whatnot. If you could go to a market that had pauses, like if you could go back to that, if crypto could be 5 days a week, would you take it? Or do you love the 7 day a week market?
I mean, that's such a double-edged sword, because there is I prefer them. I love 7 days a week, 365 a year. I do. I just love it because I'm a degenerate, you know, previous athlete, you know, corporate ex guy. I just need to have something to compete on or at least look at and know that I can compete. So I like them, but the double-edged sword to that is I am in violent agreement with you about having something else outside, because if you can't manage yourself, it's going to suck you into, you know, a 6 feet deep hole pretty quick. And having another gig, having hobbies, you know, just stuff to do outside when things aren't working. You just got to get wins outside of trading. You know, if you're on a losing streak, you got to get a win somewhere else, in the gym or at a job or a contract, something else. So I agree with you 100%, man. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah. And you're, so I know that you've got, you mentioned this in Chat with Traders too, like you've got a ton of involvement with dogs, and you were working on something with a rescue at the time. Are you still doing that type of work?
So we do stuff off and on. Yeah. It's a lot of volunteer now. Over the last year, our plate got full. So some of the projects, that we were looking to do, we couldn't. But we did, you know, we worked with, the rescue transports. A lot of Texas dogs, you know, end up over on the West Coast. And so we'd work with a couple shelters down there who would pull them from the kill centers and and we'd work on coordinating in our network the transport over to the West Coast. And that's you know, awesome. It's fun, it's rewarding. Yeah, it's great. And now, and you know, now we've got another dog too. So yeah, I still involved as much as I can be. You know how it is when sometimes you just don't have enough hands, you know?
Absolutely. I'm feeling that every day recently.
Yeah, for sure.
With crypto in a whatever this has been now, six, seven month down market, has there been a part of you that wants to go back and trade the parabolic Netflix moves or like some other? I mean, yes, even the largest of caps on that side of the market seem to be going crazy. I have no idea what's going on in the small cap land. So what's stopping you from going and playing other markets?
The one thing is I've only been in crypto, you know, for less than a year from a clean break from legacy. And I just don't think I'm ready to take on more market participation or even homework, just because a lot of people think there's similarities. I just think that Bitcoin and crypto, they move to a different rhythm, a much different rhythm. And I just, my whole goal since I started was just to become as in tune with that rhythm, kind of like what you were saying earlier. So where I get an alarm on my phone anywhere, I don't need to look at the chart because I know what the chart looks like and I can see what action's taking place. I don't think I'll go back anytime soon. It's been tempting, honestly. I want to go back there and short the hell out of some stuff, but it might not be ready yet, you know, and I haven't been watching them long enough to have a feel for it. I just know that, you know, if they take off, they're going to take off hard, and we haven't seen a really good exit pump yet. So those are kind of some of the things I'm looking for as to when might be a good time to transition back over or, you know, take a bite of something.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I actually did I don't know what you'd call it. It was getting my jollies out on my desire to short everything. Because if, you know, God, if you go look at a linear chart in traditional markets on a monthly scale, you feel like you're staring at the biggest parabolic moves that we've seen in the market, except it's on all the big caps, like stuff that, you know, it's real companies. It's not the same speculation that we see like with crypto or even weed stocks, small caps, pink sheets, whatever. I mean, it's freaking Netflix and Google and just Amazon, just the biggest companies in our ecosystem. Yeah. So it's crazy. Valuation. It's crazy to see.
Thick. Yeah,
they are. Nuts. It's been blowing my mind because I started trading a long time ago. I remember Google going public. I was a kid and I had $1,000 on the sidelines and I was like,
nice.
I could just put it in that, and I didn't. And I kicked myself several times. But I remember,
you know what's
it's
funny, just as you said that, it's the trades that you don't take that take off. Those are the ones that stay with you. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, man. I remember it was like $88 a share and I was like, Google doesn't make anything. That's absurd. anyway, so I've watched markets for a long time, but the timing for me with the markets were that I was finishing college around the time that the recession hit. So I felt that like my friends were getting their jobs canceled on them. And I was seeing it in my first job in manufacturing with the way it affected sales. And, you know, I was just really feeling the recession and the opportunity for what that presented in the markets. And it's been such a long time since then, like that we've essentially been on this tear in the traditional markets. Yep. And the itch for me to go in there and just short the crap out of everything is so strong right now. And granted, I'm getting to the point where I'm protecting myself on a cash basis. But like you said, I needed to just get it off my mind to say like, okay, this isn't necessarily ready to just go and short it all, because these could continue to be irrational, and they can destroy you while they defy logic.
Yes, they can.
And that happened with Bitcoin. You know, I'm sure there were people shorting everything after $5,000, and we ended up at $20,000. Like it went to fever pitch before it backed down. And that's I don't think that component changes no matter which market you look at. Like the market can always crush you and go beyond reasonable places that you think are like the top or the bottom. And I think it's, you just got to be careful in that type of environment. So I guess I just commend you for being willing to stick with an asset class like that with crypto and really identify with it and know it, because I think that's a great strength, because learning exactly its ebbs and its flows and whatnot, I think is so valuable. And I think I could learn that lesson. So I appreciate you sharing that.
I appreciate you sharing that. You appreciate that.
it's a funny market, man. The whole economy is cracking me up. So let's finish the show with, we're in July. We're in somewhat of a no man's land of a bear market, I personally believe. The 6K plus region. Having stared at the ticker for the last year, if I forced you to apply a bias and tell me what you think is going to happen, what's your gut telling you, and how are you going to approach that in your trading plan?
That's a great question. And it's probably not going to be received. My answer won't be received very well, but I'm just at this point in my trading career, it benefits me more to be bearish on everything all the time. And the reason I say that is because then I force the chart to prove me wrong rather than me thinking with myself, watching the chart, whether I'm right or wrong, if that makes sense. So I just assume everything is guilty until proven innocent. And that's why I put those stops in there, because I don't want to anticipate. I don't want to use skill. I don't want to be a good trader. I just want to be able to utilize my computer correctly to, maximize on some geometric patterns that show up every now and then.
That's interesting. You're bearish until proven otherwise.
I am, really, because it's just, there's so many things that have come into play now. It's just, crypto 2018 is night and day difference from crypto 2017. And, being a new guy, I can't even imagine how different it is from 2016, 15, 14, 13. And so, quite frankly, I don't know if we're going to see, 50, 100 grand. It'd be awesome if it did. I love it when everybody makes money. I don't think we're going to see zero either, or 1K. Just to me, it seems like that the market is stabilizing, and I think it's good for a trader, like us who are trading zones. It works out great. I hope it ranges for the rest of my life. I would be just fine with that. If we stay between 57 and 65 for the rest of my life, I'm good. I'll trade that all day. It's,
hit those boundaries.
Yeah. So that's my professional opinion, which is not professional at all.
No, I think that's fine. I think it's actually pretty well in line with what I've seen from a lot of people. And I think it's a good lesson to learn too, of like make the chart prove otherwise. Like show you that we're in a reversal. I do have a question though. When you're approaching the market in that way, do you think that that gives the market a significant opportunity to fake you out? I'll explain further what I mean there. So like the last bear market and what we've seen several times before, if you look at the NASDAQ monthly when the NASDAQ crashed back in the day, if you've ever studied that, they had severe retracements to where it looked like it was going to go back to being business as usual before it was actually time to be business as usual. So the great trap, like not the 11.8, not even the 9.8, like a really severe up move. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a scenario where you say, make the chart prove me wrong, like make me become bullish, do you think that it can trap you in a scenario like that?
I'm sure it can. And, it does that. These new fake outs that we're seeing are,
yeah, these little barts and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun to watch, but they're also learning experiences each time. You know, when those happen, you know, it's a great time to watch the order books, watch the tape, watch different time frames. You know, what's going on? Is there anything other major variable affecting the DNA of this trade or this chart? And so I don't think I have a problem getting faked out again, because, you know, my stops are so tight. If it blows my stop, then now I have a chance to, okay, so that wasn't right, but I have an opportunity to watch and see what it does on this fake out. It gives me time to, again, get back that feel. Is this really a reversal move? Is this a fake out? And when you're looking on, you know, 1 minute charts, it's hard to do that. But when you're looking at, you know, anywhere from a 30 minute up to a 3 day, it's a lot easier to identify those. And that's why I say I don't use like any one time frame, because I base my trades off of, you know, the 3 day, the week, the 1 day, and even down to the 12 hour. But I use the lower time frames to get the details of what's going on in there, to see what patterns are repeating where, if I can gain an edge anywhere, you know, or just learn from that chart. So if it wants to go bull and fake me out, do it. And once it's confirmed, I'll hop on the gravy train and be the biggest supporter, you know, just like last year. But if it's trending down and it continues to trend down, then I will trend down with it.
Yeah. When you talk about taking those trades on the lower time frames, are you finding yourself most comfortable on calling short-term reversals, or are you trying to find an opportunity to hop onto the low time frame trend as well?
I'm primarily looking for breakdowns on higher time frames.
Okay.
So, well, it depends on what higher time frame is. So just my staple chart is my 15, 30 minute chart. That's my kind of bread and butter go-to to see kind of a bigger picture and then kind of some of the details that are going on inside. Okay. You know, I'll look at what's going on in there, look at the range. And then, you know, just pick my spots and that's it. I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible for myself. And it's so easy to overthink these things, especially in crypto, especially with the volume surges that you get, you know, out of nowhere for nothing, sell-offs, et cetera. And so I'm just trying to pick those definitive ranges, draw the most visible line. My wife's not a trader. I always bring her in and I say, babe, where's support and where's resistance? And that's, you know, that's what I go off of, because I want to trade based on what everyone else is seeing, not what I see, because I'll overanalyze it, you know, but I can't overanalyze, you know, 50,000 people thinking Bitcoin's going to go to, you know, 8 million. That's, you know, you've got an edge there. You've got people that type whatever. That's a bad example. I don't know.
No, I like it. You're triggering me on other stuff I want to ask you. We might have to do another episode at some point to dig in. I love the idea of having someone that's not really reading charts to just come look at it and say, "Hey, what do you see here? Where's this? Yeah. Where's this going?" I think that's brilliant, actually. I almost wonder if you could do like a service of that, you know, like where someone visits a website and they just like point out the obvious.
Yeah,
that would be really interesting to me. So, are you a Bitcoin believer in the sense that Bitcoin will be transformative, or would you say that you're here for the trade?
I came here for the trade, mm-hmm. you know, and I have a technical background, not like anybody in here. Crypto is way beyond my knowledge base, but I came for the trade, and you know, obviously, once you come here, you just learn about crypto, and you learn where the tribes are and the mantras and the visions and et cetera. And I don't think that I would say I'm 100% believer. And I say that, and I don't think Bitcoin is going to change the world today. I think it has a lot of potential to dismantle some flawed systems as a base layer. But it's still infancy. You know, 5 years into a major, somewhat financial shift, or being considered a financial shift as a new asset class recognized globally. I mean, the clutter that goes into making something like that a stationary object in society, it's just, there's a lot of legwork and heavy lifting, I think, that needs to be done in order for it to actually make a change. And quite frankly, I don't think the change is going to come from any of the talking heads, you know, their ideas about, you know, solving hunger or making donations easier or instant fast payments. A lot of those narratives sound cool in crypto, but that's because we're in crypto. You go ask a normal person outside about whether they care about any of that stuff, and they'll, you know, say, thanks for wasting my time. I don't care if it takes me 3 seconds or 30 seconds to get, you know, a transaction complete. So I think that the use cases may or may not have already been found out yet. But again, I'm an idiot, and I've only been here for a year. So I'm probably going to get swatted or something, or kidnapped after this, just for...
No, I think you're applying rational analysis to it, of being optimistic about the use cases for crypto, but you... understanding that it's not going to change the world tomorrow. And to be honest, I don't think there's anything wrong for being here for the trade. Like, yeah. Is it Arthur Hayes who says that he's just in it for the volatility? Like, yeah. whether yeah. it goes up or down, he just wants the volatility, right?
Right.
And it's hard to get this type of volatility in another market.
That's why I stopped. No, I agree with you. And I think that's a great parlay, a great example to make sense of what I was saying. You know, is that I honestly, it would be awesome if Bitcoin went to $1 billion. It would suck if it went to zero. But if it just stays, you know, doing price discovery for the rest of its life, I'm totally cool with that, because it is the most liquid instrument I've ever traded. And I love having the ability to sit down at any time and know that the volume is there. And the pre-written range on a chart is there, that I can sit down anytime and say, is there a trade or is there not a trade? You know, whereas in some of the instruments, you can't trade on the weekends. Obviously you can't trade at night. Forex global or is global, but I don't trade Forex. The moves, the opportunities, and quite frankly, I think that the TA in crypto is pretty remarkable. And let me preface that real quick. I crypto trading is so much more technically oriented for me than anything else, and that's why I like it, is because I can put set principles on it and stick to them. I don't have to do any fundamental analysis or, you know, any fact checking or join any groups. It's just, you know, I trade the large caps mostly, and so it's very technical. I might support a buddy's bag or something in the alts if you want.
Yeah.
Come bleed with me.
Well, Jesse, this has been fun. I want to leave it there, because I like how you wrapped that up. I appreciate you coming on and sharing where your story's gone since you were in traditional markets and what you're doing now in crypto. I'm happy to see your success and how much you've learned and been able to do well as a trader to support yourself. I think that's incredible. I think you downplay your own knowledge too much, and I appreciate your humility, but that humility is not necessary in my book, because watching you discuss markets and look at the charts and use your discipline has been really impressive to me, and that's why I wanted to have you on today. So thanks for joining me, and everybody go to... is it Psycho on Wall Street? Yeah, Psycho on Wall Street with a ST on the end. I'll link that up in the show notes on Twitter. They can follow you there. Is there anywhere else you want people to follow you or keep track?
No, that's the primary. That's where I, I exist right now.
All right.
So, and thanks again for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It's been great getting to know you too over the last year.
Yeah, man. Sounds good. All right. Everybody have a good one. Go to ledgerstatus.com to catch this episode and more. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Brian.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.